You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Have you been seeing strange things? Things that you can't explain.
We have the ability to see what no one else can. When they lose control, they can't hide. And we see them for what they really are. You are one of the last grips. We need to talk.
Welcome to Grimly Speaking. My name is Maya Aides. I'm joined this evening by Cami Settle. Yay!
Hey, Maya.
This is our sixth episode, and it's the sixth episode of the fifth season of Grimm. This episode was titled Wessennacht.
Mm-hmm. A nod to the seasonal holidays?
I think so. I mean, it seems like that to me. It could have been a reference to Krampusnacht, which would have been the week before, not too far off of that. Or it could have been a reference to Silent Night. They don't have any Christmas episode this year, so this season. So this that may be our only nod to the holidays.
That's right.
Right there.
Yeah, and with six episodes in, we're already taking this seasonal break. And so tonight it was a nice departure from Vessen of the Week to where the police episode or the police storyline actually fits in with the seasonal arc as well.
Yeah, like our last episode was about the rats, and that really had nothing at all to do with our overarching
That's right.
Vessen uprising.
Yeah, the only thing we had was trouble coming back.
Yes. Well, no, we also had her at the hospital.
Right, but she came back last episode, and there was some storyline with her.
Well, she came back the episode before that.
Okay, that's true.
I mean, that's when she stumbled into his arms, and then,
right.
And then this picked up with that, or the Rat King one picked up with her landing in his arms. I liked this episode a lot. I felt like it was paced well and worked well. So in our recap here, we have a lot to cover, but we'll try to keep it brief. Okay, now I'm trying to remember where it started. Does it start with the gang violence?
Right, so it starts with the gang violence. They're actually meeting in this warehouse, these gangs. And they're passing out addresses and names of shop owners to hit at midnight. So this is an orchestrated effort. And what we find out later is that this is orchestrated across several cities throughout the region, not just in Portland.
I didn't remember them having names, but I do know they had addresses because they were to only hit those addresses.
Right, only those addresses, that's right.
Yeah, one of the Vessen asked, what if there's somebody in the shop? And they were like, well, that's... or whatever that reptilian creature was, and too bad for them. Yeah, a little nod there. I don't know if you noticed, but when he exhaled the smoke when he had vogued, and it came out his slits on the side of his head and neck.
Oh, yeah, his gill slits, uh-huh. Yep. Oh, yeah.
You know what that reminded me of? Hmm. It reminded me of the character in Beetlejuice whose smoke would come out of her trachea hole.
Right. Yeah,
that's what
it's a good effect.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, if you can make smoke come out of some other hole in the head neck thing, that's always cool.
Definitely
don't smoke,
make
kids.
Impression. Yeah. So what we find out later from Rosalie and Monroe is that historically, riots have been started by Vessen, and so they even reference like the Boston Tea Party and some of the Union riots. In the early 19th century, in the industrialized century, so throughout history, basically the things that we think have happened were all Vessen related.
Things that we think have political, well, they do have political, things that we think we know what instigated and brought about the conflict, we only know part of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we've got one shop owner dead, which is why the police have been called into this.
They would have been called for the damage that, I mean, not our detectives wouldn't have been called if somebody hadn't been killed, but.
Yeah, I should have said that differently. That's why Nick and Hank are involved.
Right.
So they've been called in to look at the body. This guy clearly did not die from any known gang violence. He had a ripped up throat.
Yes.
And they did find the black claw symbol in one of the shops, the bakery, whose owner was kidnapped.
Right. And interestingly to me, anyway, is that the black claw, as they call themselves, their mark has always been left in red that we've seen so far, which I found kind of an idiosyncrasy thing. It's like, mm-hmm. so you call yourselves a Black Claw, but you always leave the mark in red.
Yeah, well.
Not everything is going to jive together, I guess.
That's true.
Yeah. So then, and so we've got that going on. We've got Trouble.
Yeah, so Trouble is now living with Adeline and Nick.
Yeah, isn't that just a comfy little nest right there?
Well, you know, she's obviously she's having nightmares about stuff, and it seems like she's dreaming about her training sessions or what's been happening
to
her.
I thought it was probably more likely the battles that she's been through
recently.
Yeah.
So she and Adeline get a chance to get to know each other a little bit better this episode, and she catches us up when she fills Nick in on what's been happening with her. And so she was inducted into Hadrian's Wall, which is a group that she claims is a black ops government group, and not everybody in the government knows about them.
Well, it would be stupid if everybody in the government knew about a black ops group, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's why it's a black ops group.
That's my point.
Okay, fair enough. Moving on.
Okay, so moving on. You were talking about Adeline and Trouble getting to know each other. We also got to see the very vulnerable part of Adeline when she admits that losing Diana was the worst thing that has ever happened to her. And I got to think, as a Hexen Beast, that there have been some pretty traumatic things that have happened to her.
Yeah.
Trouble sees that part of her, but and also says to her, kind of reassures her that Diana is okay.
Or she's going to be fine, is how she puts
it. Yeah, yeah, that she's going to be fine. Because Trouble knows that she's no longer with the royals, and Adeline doesn't know that. Trouble is very selective about her words and what she says. She's not lying to anybody, but she's not telling the whole truth.
Although I think she lied to Nick. Nick asked her if she knew what they did with Juliet's body, and she said no.
Well, I don't know that she does.
We'll get to this whenever we reveal the big secret at the end. But
Okay.
But I think she knows more.
Well,
all right, so.
Yeah.
So back to the story. We've got Sean Renard doing a commercial for this Andrew Dixon. That's kind of a side story going on.
Yes.
There. I agree with you. I think that he's going to regret this later.
Well, yeah. And I don't think they're just setting up a romance between he and the spot director for this TV mm-hmm. spot. I think that Adrian Dixon is more than he appears to be.
I'm
going to find out some very slimy things about him. Ooh, maybe he's a slimy kind of Vessen.
Well, speaking of slimy Vessen, let's talk about
Xavier.
So this is the guy that they kidnapped. This is the shop owner from the bakery. They kidnapped this guy and grilled him about Monroe.
And boy, they know their mark, because not only did they pick somebody who knows Monroe, but they picked somebody who is not probably the strongest of Vessen. You know, somebody who they could physically dominate.
Yeah, he was easily coerced.
Yes.
Highly frightenable. And he was quite an ugly Vessen, I have to admit. That they did have a little fun with that during the episode. We couldn't find what they called this Vessen, but
no. And I'm not even sure what kind of, you know, I mean, sometimes, I mean, I always have to, when I write it in a post, I have to find it on a Grimm website where they've spelled it, because I'm not going to try to guess how to spell it. But this one, I haven't even found anybody to say what kind of animal-like thing he is.
Right. I mean, he reminded me of one of those really ugly fishes. They have almost like a human face with a smashed-up nose, kind of a flat, I don't know what they're called, but like a goblin fish, is that right?
And that might make sense, because Monroe said that he likes flies, that flies are a delicacy.
Uh-huh, or a blobfish. So, I just don't know what they're called, but we'll come up with that in a bit.
He had really sharp teeth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He had a very watery consistency to him. Very distorted features. And later in the episode, you know, they make a comment like, oh yeah, you'll never forget that, you know, that Vogue.
That's and a later, Vogue. You
later
don't
the guy
forget.
Threatens to Vogue and they're like, oh, please, please, no, you don't have to do that. Please don't. don't do that. So that was kind of the fun bits of this episode.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of comedy or lighthearted stuff to it.
No, this was pretty dark stuff.
Yeah.
What we find out is that ultimately, after some back and forth with this guy and the lineup and the police pictures and things like that, they do identify somebody and bring her in from the gangs, and ultimately end up at a warehouse where they're going to meet the suspect, the head of these gangs. And I thought was one of the best scenes that Rosalie's ever done, she finds out that this is a trap and warns them, you know, right up at the 11th hour. Just as Nick is starting to figure it out too. And so then they go into the warehouse and are trapped. This is Sean Renard, Monroe, Hank, Sergeant Wu, and Nick. And they're trapped in this inner chamber of this warehouse. And all of a sudden, things just start sounding pretty bad outside. And then silence. That's when Nick goes to investigate.
I haven't been in a situation like that, but silence, from my experience as a viewer, is either a really bad thing or a really good thing. It can be one of the other.
Yeah.
But it's never something neutral. In this case, for them, it's a good thing. In the case of the Black Claw, it's a bad thing.
Yes.
Oh, you also didn't say that Meisner went to one of the metal doors and called somebody out of a holding cell kind of place there and told them that they were up.
So it's time to go, yeah.
Yeah, up. I can't remember his exact words, but it was like, you're out. Well,
we'll get to see that blonde later in the episode at the very end. So when Nick goes to investigate, everybody, well, almost everybody in this gang are dead or dying.
Mm-hmm.
But he has no idea what's happened. And then, of course, the one lone survivor is the head of the gang. I can't remember this guy's name, but they go through
it. It doesn't matter.
Fight.
He's not around for long.
Spoilers. And so, yeah, right when this guy has the better of Nick, we see this hand, you know, pushing up into the air, this mysterious blonde stranger, and the force is with this person. And so then this evil guy flies up in the air and he's dashed upon the debris in the warehouse and crushed and what have you. And then the season finale at the very end is that Nick looks up across his warehouse and he sees this lone figure standing there, supposedly of the person who's just saved him. And it's Juliet. At least we think it's Juliet.
Yeah. And that's the word, that's the name that he kind of whispers under his breath,
right,
in disbelief. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's changed in her appearance. I mean, she's got this blonde wig on. She's got a whole lot of makeup on. I mean, I'm sure they had to make her look a little different. Maya, you've done some reading on some interviews about this after the fact.
I'm not sure exactly when it was posted, but it was posted Friday, the same day as the episode aired.
Yeah.
But I'm going to guess that they didn't allow it to be posted until after the episode aired. It was with the website TV Line. And they interviewed both Bitsy Tulick, who plays Juliet. They also interviewed, I believe it was Dave Greenwalt, but I'm not sure if they also had Jim Kauf on the interview as well.
Right.
And
hey, go to a break first before we get into this?
Yes, we should. We'll go to a break, and we'll be right back after these messages. We're going to talk more about Bitsy. Yay!
Stay tuned.
Sci-Fi for Chicks will be right back.
Mid-season is upon us, but the recaps continue. Join us over at sci-fi4me.com as we dive into the mid-season replacement shows with our distinctive charm, wit, and brilliance. We talk about the shows and share our analysis, and you're more than welcome to join the conversation. Only at sci-fi4me.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
And we're back. My name is still Maya, and I'm still here with Cammy.
And I'm still here, too.
Yay! So as we were saying, on TV Line, they had an interview with Bitsy Tulock and David Greenwalt, and they were talking about the spoilers and the whole storyline where they, you know, Dave Greenwalt had announced that Juliet was dead, and to be able to keep his word, they've come up with this whole twisted, contrived storyline. Juliet was not killed by the arrows that Trouble shot into her, and Trouble knew that what she shot her with was not the poison that they usually use to kill, that it was something else. So, yes, you're right about, you know, my Trouble knew that Juliet wasn't dead, but when he asked about what happened to her body, I don't know that she knew exactly what all happened with Juliet. And my reasoning is that there was so much going on with her. I mean, she was being trained for her missions. So
see,
I don't know.
For some reason,
that
I think that she was helping break Juliet.
Oh, you think she was a part of the breaking her down process?
Yes, I do.
Ah, I'm not so, well, yeah. I don't know about that. Yeah.
So what you found out was that they broke Juliet and they gave her this new identity. And
Eve.
She's supposed to be, Eve, and she's supposed to be this character now that has all the memories of Juliet, but none of the emotional baggage.
Or at least some of the memories. She knows what happened to her. Okay. She knows that she was shot. She knows about Nick, but apparently she doesn't really have too much memory or much knowledge about the actual relationship that they'd had.
So how do you see this playing out in the rest of the season? I mean, how do you
Well,
hope it's gonna
you
look?
And I have talked about this basically off air, if you will, about how you think that Juliet or Eve will be this character who is pretty much devoid of emotion and emotional baggage, and so that she can go and be this fighting machine and not have those emotional consequences or consciousness.
Well, I think that that's their intention, but I also think that they're going to inject her memories back into the story eventually that are going to complicate her persona as Eve.
Yeah. And we were comparing her to Data on Star Trek Next Generation. And I said that I felt like the reason that that character worked was because his overall goal was always to become more human. So he was always seeking experiences and lessons and trying to learn how to be more human and trying to understand what it was like to be human and have emotions and have friends and all of those things. I mean, he was trying to learn how to have a sense of humor.
Right. Well, that's how the audience could start rooting for Data. And, you know, they actually had this bond with him as a character.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm just not sure that we're meant to bond with Eve in that way.
But my problem with that is that if we don't have a connection with her, if she doesn't have emotions, how is the audience going to connect with her emotionally? I'm not sure that that will work, particularly over the long term. I think you can do that. You can pull it off for a short term thing, but she's supposed to be a regular member of the cast. It's not like she's back for a one-off or something.
It'll be interesting to see how they develop that.
I'm
a bit dubious about an evil twin type of approach. I've seen it done before. You know, it almost feels
we all have
it almost feels like a soap opera versus a crime drama. And I know they have these interpersonal stories that they have to continue, but my God, how much can you drag a person like Nick Burkhart through with the same people over and over and over? I mean, there's this whole Nick and Juliet and Adeline thing going on. And we just finally thought, okay, Juliet's gone. Nick can get on with his life. Adeline is there for his protection, but I don't see them as a love interest.
Couple.
Right. And even admits to Trouble, oh yeah, no, that would just be way too weird. You know, that would just,
but she was really awkward about it too, where
she
you
was.
Weren't really sure if she's convinced of that herself or
right.
Or what, you know, I mean, it was hard to get a good read on her from that short interaction.
Right. Well, I think that Adeline looks back and says, oh, with all the crap that I've pulled in this guy's life, that could never happen. even though right now things are changed between them. They, you know, they share this child, and she clearly needs his protection and his support. But I just think that she's looking at this with kind of a skewed vision, if you will.
Adeline?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she's looking at it from the standpoint of a new mom.
Right, exactly. She needs the protection. She needs the support.
She doesn't, and it's not a normal new mom thing, let's be honest here. She's a former Hexen beast who had a baby with a grin.
Right, right. Well, for spite, you know, it wasn't, she didn't get pregnant on purpose, but, you know, she did this to spite him.
I think that was karma.
Well, yeah, probably. Zing.
Yeah. Old kick in the patootski.
But clearly she's had a lot of change of heart over the last few months in her life.
Yeah, and part of that, though, has to be as a result of the Hexen B suppressant that she took.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if she was still had her full Hexen B powers, if she would have quite this much of a change of heart, or if how much of that is caused by the suppressant that she still is under the influence of.
Right. Yeah. We don't know how long that will last, if it's permanent or not.
Well, she said it won't be permanent. I've been surprised that we are, you know, now to the mid-season finale. We've had six episodes, and still haven't seen anything of her Hexenish.
Okay, so I'll make a prediction about that.
Okay.
I'll predict that we've got Eve coming back into the story.
Yes.
And we don't know if Eve's going to get any old memories back that would create any kind of emotional response or not, but I think that they will probably touch on that.
The next episode coming back is titled Eve of Destruction.
Okay, well, clearly that's what she was trained for. Was to destroy. So she's a destructive force. Yes, but for the team that we're rooting for. So I think that Eve will start to remember as Juliet. I think that's going to happen. I also think that Adeline will start to discover that she has some powers, but she's not going to tell anybody.
Yeah, I can't imagine. That seems like something she'd want to keep to herself for as long as she can.
Right. She has an opportunity to pursue her old career, and I think she may look into that as a means to get more independent.
I've been surprised that she has been willing to just be there in their little, totally unsecret, but apparently fairly well-fortified home.
Well, she's got motivation to stay there right now.
Yeah,
they don't know who's after them, and she needs protection. You know, he's taking care of her.
If you get stuck with bad weather or you're sick or something, I mean, it doesn't take too many days before you start getting cabin fever and you just want to get out.
Oh, sure. Well, and she's able to get out and go get stuff out of the house. So she's gone to the grocery store. She's gone to go pick up, you know, do errands and things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like she's stuck in this cabin snowed in the woods, but I do think that they are trying to stay very cautious about staying off the radar.
Yeah, they haven't done a great job of that, though, because trouble found them and so did Meister.
Well, and they did explain that this time. They explained that Trouble knew, she already knew Nick's phone number.
Right.
And she has this super duper souped up motorcycle. I mean, this is like the Bat Cycle, right?
Right, yes.
It's got shooting darts. It's pretty dang awesome. It shoots an oil slick and exhaust that can knock you out and everything. It's got every button you can imagine. And it also has this really great locator, like GPS locator, that you plug in any phone number, and that's how she found Nick.
So do you think Meisner used the same kind of GPS, or did he track the motorcycle?
He tracked the motorcycle.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that explains that one.
Yeah, and I was glad they kind of wrapped that up, because I was thinking to myself, how did she get there in the first place?
Yes, I was too.
Uh-huh.
It was like if she just sort of randomly found him, I wasn't going to buy that. And
right.
You know.
Yeah.
Now, she would have had his phone number.
Right, so if we look at the flip side, Nick has his cell phone number on his cards. He gives, he's a policeman, so he gives his card out to everybody. So a lot of people have his phone number. And if anybody got a hold of that, they could use the same kind of high-tech technology and find him too.
That's so, not really...
Yeah.
Oh, no, wow.
Unless he's just using a private phone for that and keeping his police phone at... I just don't see how it's going to work that way, but there's the hole for me.
Yes. Yeah, that is definitely a hole. A big one.
But, well, you know, hindsight's always 20/20.
Well...
But those are my
projections. Well, and that's part of the problem between the job that he has, where he needs to be in contact with people and needs witnesses and suspects and so forth, or people that they are interviewing to be able to get in touch with him.
Right.
And his need as a Grimm to not be found.
Exactly.
That's when life and your double life get in the way.
Therein lies the rub. So how do you deal with that? I don't envy the writers on this to try and work around these plot holes or like little details that they have to kind of fit into place. But they tried.
Devil's in the details.
That's right.
I did like the writing in this episode better, or maybe it was just that I didn't feel like it was waiting on anything. I felt like last week's episode was waiting for the information that we got this week.
Okay.
You know, we had the only thing that was really valuable to the season as an overall arc were the parts that happened with Trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
And that wasn't that much of the episode. So if you know, it was kind of like they could have done a short episode. Yeah, you can't do that. But anyway, it just didn't feel like the Rat King police case was contributing anything, and it. To me, wasn't a great case because, well, we didn't get a lot of detail and we didn't get a lot of information that would actually make it more interesting. We got a tiny little bit of history that didn't really go anywhere, and we got to see the stop motion creature, and you know, it just anyway, that was last week. This is this week.
Yeah. Well, had it been like if the Rat King Prince, you know, the prince that was killed at the beginning, if he had been integral in some kind of uprising or something else that had to do with the entire seasonal plot, it would have made it more interesting.
It would have made more sense as well.
Yes.
For that, episode to be important and come right before the mid-season finale, would have made more sense. But that's not how it went. Yeah. Yep. Our S&M, our
Well, I've already been speculating and musing.
Well, yeah, but, you know, gave forth your theory, in fact.
I did. So do you have theories?
Well, I have a musing, I guess. It's not really it's not a theory.
Muse away.
I'm questioning the whole facility where Meisner goes and lets his gladiators, if you will, out of their cells one by one and tells them to go do battle. I mean, we assumed when we first started seeing that it was door number one. Well, it turns out there's door number one, door number two. You know?
Are we sure about that?
Well,
we're not really sure about that.
Well, there are more doors that in the facility.
So we know that Trouble, he came to get Trouble and said, it's time to go. That was a couple of episodes ago. And then he's let this blonde... Eve out at the end of this episode, or, you know, kind of to become the end of the episode. So,
yeah, and the other question there is, how did they know that Nick and everybody was going to be in danger?
Well, it's a very good question. Maybe Trouble called him.
How would she know?
Well, she knew that Nick had to go, remember?
Yeah.
He was talking to her when he got the call.
She would have no way of knowing where he was going. Because he left from the police station for Eve to show up at that warehouse. So are they tracking Nick and they could tell?
Well, she
that
said
he
they
was
were
going...
watching him. She said they've been watching Adeline, they've been watching Nick.
That's true.
I think they're highly aware of everybody's whereabouts.
His movements.
Yep.
Well, and they were, Meisner himself watched our little gang, our Vessen gang, I shouldn't call him that because now we have real...
Right.
We have groups that are more gang-like than they are. But anyway, he was at the warehouse where they apparently had just cleaned up from the battle that had happened there that ended up killing Chavez. Right. And when Nick brought Hank and Monroe, I don't remember if Wu was with them or not, but anyway, Hank and Monroe back there to the warehouse to see it.
Right.
And then when they left, we saw Meisner step out of the shadow.
Right.
So he knew that they were there. I guess, yeah, they must have, I wonder if they had some kind of a tracker on Nick.
Well, that's a speculation.
I mean, that would help them for keeping an eye on him.
Uh-huh, it would. Or maybe it's just Meisner following him.
Then how does he have time to do?
That's all, it's his job. I don't know. It's his job. He's just very good at it.
Okay, that's not quite working for me.
Okay. Well, we'll find out more next, well, after the season break.
Yeah, not till January 22nd. Right. Yeah.
So you and I both had the same favorite episode or favorite scene tonight, or in this episode, and that was the scene with Rosalie in the car.
I did really like that scene, but actually probably my favorite scene was seeing former Juliet, now Eve, stepping out of the shadow and seeing her face. And the reason was because all along, since the end of last season, I've been saying that she was coming back. And most people thought I had lost it.
So you were vindicated in that last scene.
Yeah, so when she came back, there was an audible hoot coming from me, and I was like, yes, I told you so. And of course, there was nobody there with me watching it. But
yeah. Well, I think the finer points of that is that it's not Juliet.
Yes.
I think that's how they could come across and say, Juliet is dead.
Right. Okay, well,
so
and
it's the character Juliet that we know as Juliet, and it's not her body, but it's Juliet as a person.
Yeah, that was
gone.
My whole, that was, yeah. So when I read this interview on TV Line, that was one of the things that kind of bugged me, was that because David Greenwalt had said that Juliet was dead, and then they had to come up with this elaborate scheme for A, not letting Bitsy Tulloch be with the rest of the cast, say, at Comic-Cons, and she wasn't in any of the photo shoots, and, you know, all kinds of stuff to try to,
well, you can't blame
sell
them for that
story. I mean,
they wanted to keep that as a surprise ending for the mid-season break.
It's Moffat-like.
Well, maybe they're taking a page out of his book.
Yeah, I don't like that, though.
Well, I think that he was being truthful in that it is not Juliet. It's no longer Juliet.
That's, you know, he's doing like Trouble does. He said...
He didn't say Bitsy Tulloch isn't coming back. He said Juliet is dead.
Yes, exactly.
And that's the final point of
it. Like,
that.
Trouble says something. She doesn't lie. She just doesn't tell you the whole truth.
Exactly.
Right. And that's exactly what he did, too. He said, Juliet is dead. It's a real death, blah, blah, blah. Well, I think he did say something like it's, you know, meaning that it wasn't a comic book death where people come back. But in reality, she wasn't killed. And it kind of was a comic book or a soap opera death, because now... I mean,
it was
how many
comic
times
book
in
death.
The soap opera? In the soap operas, they do that all kind of thing all the time, you know. Oh, it's not me; it's my brother.
Yeah. Well, never. this was kind of a comic book death. It's like, okay, they die, but they didn't die, and then they come back, but there's somebody else.
Right.
Or they have some new features or new enhancements or something else, some other identity.
Right. And you were wondering about I was talking about Kelly Burkhart and.
Right.
Whether or not she was really dead, because we had a little bit of trouble. Trouble had a slight reaction when she learned that the baby had been named Kelly after Nick's mom. And then, yeah, so.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know that she reacted badly about that.
No.
She just recognized
badly.
that was why she said, oh, after Nick's mom.
Yeah.
So she knew exactly where that name came from.
Although you got the feeling that they know everything that's been happening anyway. They would have known that the baby was named Kelly. they know that
yeah,
Adeline doesn't have her Hexenbeast powers right now. They right. You know, they know all of those things. So.
Yeah. Well, and she was
probably
quick to
know
tell
what
Adeline.
Brand of coffee they drink.
Well, they might. Yes. Yeah, Portland's best. She did. She was quick to assure Adeline that they didn't want her kid.
Yes.
And that was, I think that put Adeline at ease because she's already had that happen once. It's just not fair, you know.
No, it wouldn't be fair. But I think this baby doesn't have the same properties, if you will, as Diana.
Well, sure.
We haven't seen anything so far that indicates that this baby is unusual in any ways yet.
Right, right.
I'm sure it is unusual because kind of how can you not be?
I think there's going to be some stuff coming out about this kid's abilities soon enough. But,
which will
but
be
not,
interesting.
Not this season. Yeah.
Since Nick didn't know that he was of Grimm descent until he was clearly an adult, you know?
Right.
Yeah. They've definitely gone and changed how the Grimmness happens.
Right. So I just wanted to give kudos to Bree Turner, who plays Rosalie, on her performance in this episode, because it was clearly an emotional roller coaster for her just in a very, very short period of time. So she went, this is the drive in the car with Xavier.
Right.
Where she's, first of all, she's concerned about this guy. She's trying to be empathetic and understanding and trying to find out what's wrong. And then all of a sudden she goes to a bit of an alarm because something's not quite right. And she recognizes, what are you not telling me? And then she goes to panic, and then she goes to anger, and then she's just full out mama bear at the end, which I just thought, it's such a range of emotions for an actor.
I think she knocked him out, didn't she? She like
oh, yeah.
She slammed his head
she
into
punched
the,
him, and then
into
she
the
slammed his head
dashboard.
In the dashboard. That's right. And, you know, and so she went from something that was just so empathetic and caring to, you son of a bitch. Which I think she did actually say that line. So,
yes,
you know,
she did.
Documented. And her performance, I thought, was just stellar this week.
Yeah, it was. It really was. And the other one that I would give kudos to would be, Jacqueline Toboni, who plays Treble.
Yeah.
Toboni. I'm not sure how you pronounce her last name. Sorry, hun. Jacqueline, she has grown a lot as an actress. Most of the other actors are more that have joined the show over the past four seasons. Now we're into the fifth season, have been more, if you will, seasoned when they joined the show. And Jacqueline has gained a lot of more skill and experience, I think, as an actress during her time on the show. So that's
yeah. Well, and she's actually shown a lot of growth as a character as well within the writing. So she, you know, she came to us as a street smart punk kind of person, and now she's working for the government as kind of a high level hitman for Bad Vesson.
Yeah, be interesting to find out. You know, she kind of said what she was doing, but she kind of didn't say what she was doing. She said, "They send me out to do what Grimms do," but based on her nightmares and such, there's a lot of, I don't know how she's going to get over all of that, because it's clearly troubling her.
That's exactly not, right. You
know, troubling trouble.
I see what you did there.
What else do we need to cover? Is there anything else that we haven't gotten in?
You know, I think we covered everything on the episode and the speculations and musings, so... If you're good, Maya, I'm going to say thanks to everybody for tuning in.
Yes.
And
please do.
Come back after the mid-season break, we'll be back.
Next year.
January 22nd is the next episode, and we'll be covering Grimly Speaking starting then. So you can find all of our podcasts at iTunes through Sci-Fi for Me or at scififorme.com under the podcast tab. Our email is scififorchicks@scififorme.com. You can call the hotline at 573-42-SCI-FI. And you can find us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. You can check out also some other reviews, news, recaps on all your favorite shows at scififorme.com. Maya and I both sit on the Level 1187 panel. We recap Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. each week. And
Which is also on hiatus right now, too.
Yes, it is. We're going to have kind of a quiet holiday time at home and maybe be able to read up and watch some movies, perhaps.
Maybe. Agent Carter will start up January 19th. So right before Grimm comes back,
yep.
Agent Carter starts up, but S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't come back until March.
Yeah, it seems like it's sometime in March. It's a long wait. So we may have to do a Marvel episode, like a Marvel podcast, catch us up with the Marvel Universe during that time.
Well, we will be doing the Agent Carter pod. I mean, that'll sit in for...
Right.
That will be our Level 1187 topic during that run.
Right, until we come back.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks again for joining us, and we will see you after the holidays.
Yep, take care, and bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.